Casey Jones Village in Jackson, Tennessee, tucked in the heart of the fabled music highway, is actually an historic village with everything from an old-fashioned country store to an antebellum mansion. Of course, there's also a museum showcasing the story of legendary train engineer Casey Jones. But another anchor of the village is the restaurant that specializes in traditional Southern comfort food with a twist. You see, owner Clark Shaw and his family operate an extensive organic garden that supplies their restaurant with fresh-plucked veggies every day. It's also an official American Heart Association teaching garden for kids of all ages. Come along and join Clark Shaw for an illuminating conversation and the backstory about the Ballad of Casey Jones, as told by Jimmy Bailey, Director of Museums and Education. Now let's join Clark Shaw.
You know, West Tennessee has got a great, great heritage. It's got a great musical heritage, and Jackson's right in the middle between two legendary locations, of course, Memphis and Nashville, and we're right along the interstate between the two, in the home of Carl Perkins and Casey Jones. Carl Perkins is from here. Blue suede shoes, daddy sang bass, played with Elvis and Johnny Cash, you know, for
Local boy.
We kind of think that he invented rockabilly music.
Mm-hmm. Other people do too.
Yes, indeed. In fact, W.S. Holland, who was Johnny Cash's drummer for nearly 40 years, lives here in Jackson.
Wow.
And was, of course, very close friends with Carl.
And he's still around.
He's still around, still doing great. But he drove his car, to Sun Records to meet Sam Phillips, and, of course, kind of the rest is history.
Wow. Yeah. He's living history.
Let's go
meet him.
Oh, I'd love to. When I get to visit with him, I mean, it's just, I'm looking at music history.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. Yes. He was there every song, every place that Johnny Cash ever played. He was there. That drum is his drum, you know. It's amazing.
That's so cool, and you get to hang out with him.
We get to hang out with him. The other thing that was so cool, many years ago before Carl Perkins died, he used to live to come here and eat at our restaurant. And one night after he finished eating, we walked outside, and there was an old bench here on our property. We sat down there for 2 hours. 2 hours. Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, the Beatles, Eric Clapton, all those folks that he knew. Mm-hmm. And they idolized him. You know, the Beatles have been quoted as saying if there wouldn't have been a Carl Perkins, it wouldn't be the Beatles, you know.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
That's pretty powerful. That's in quotes. They've got that somewhere along the way, yeah.
I love it. Well, let's talk about you and your dad and your family and your roots here.
Oh, sure. This old country store that's kind of the foundation of what we do here at Casey Jones Village was founded by my dad in 1965. His name was Brooks Shaw. He was running a canned meat business. He had worked in a country store as a boy. Mm-hmm. He knew that country stores were disappearing from the American South, and he had a couple of heart attacks. The doctor said, you need a hobby. And so he began collecting Southern country store antiques to reminisce of the time he was a boy.
When he opened that in the 60s, it was a working country store?
Well, it started off strictly as a museum. We had thousands of Southern country store antiques. Mm-hmm. We did have a little ice cream area, and we had a bar stool with a counter with bar stools, and we served cold-cut cheese and cracker plates and things like that.
So you grew up in a country store then?
Absolutely. From the time I was 10 years old, this is all I've ever known. And it was a $1 admission charge, and you got a lifetime admission with that. But after about 6 months, he said, this is not paying the rent. He went to his mother, my grandmother, and he said, Mom, I need some help with food. People are asking for more food. And so white beans, turnip greens, crackling cornbread, that's kind of the signature of what we do. We serve millions of pounds of crackling bread, Tennessee country ham, Southern fried chicken. We do Southern fried chicken on our breakfast buffet.
Oh, wow.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
Because my grandmother would have done that back on the farm back in the day. And so we try to emulate that with classics, traditional Southern cooking.
And this has grown, though. This started out as a country store museum,
yep.
And it's now a village. Tell us about that evolution.
Well, we did lose my dad in 1971. He was only 46 years old to his fourth heart attack, so he never got to see Casey Jones Village. But we think we're carrying on his legacy. But what happened after his death, my mother, Ann Shaw, a lot of people said, you need to sell the business and get out. And she said, no, I want to keep it. And so we had a manager named Norwood Jones that ran it like it was his own. Wonderful guy. Later became an owner. We ran it, and we saw people coming off the interstate more and more. And so as they did, we said, gee, what if we owned our own land, our own building, closer to the interstate? And so we found this property right off of Interstate 40, and we bought it, and then we built our old country store there. And we wanted to name it after Jackson's most famous son, which we thought was, you know, it was either Carl Perkins or Casey Jones. We chose Casey Jones because Carl was still living, and we didn't want to take his name. He might have wanted cut for the day. And he was incredible. But anyway, so we named it Casey Jones Village. And we knew that the city was having serious issues maintaining the Casey Jones home. It was losing thousands of dollars every year. So we went to the city and said, look, if you let us relocate it, we'll pick it up and move it to our place. We'll have Jackson's two major travel attractions together in one location. And they jumped at it. So we literally picked up this house, picked up this 130-ton steam locomotive engine, moved them here. One of our best friends built a little group of shops here, and then we've been adding, ever since then, authentic historical buildings, most of which were going to be lost to history. They were falling down, they were going to be demolished, and we've moved a number of unique historical buildings here since then.
I'm thinking three things. If you build it, they will come, one. Number two, a private enterprise. This is not governmental, it's not county, it's right. A private business.
Yes, sir.
And it's not necessarily nonprofit, even though you might be.
Some years it may have been nonprofit, but we're still here after 52 years.
But it's a wonderful story of a small town, and how do you survive? How do you make it? It could have been that you would have had to leave here and go to Memphis or go to Nashville for you personally to survive.
Yeah.
But you didn't, and you guys made it work.
Well, we did. I had some great co-owners along the way. We have a great team of employees. We have a server who's been with us 40 years. We have two cooks who've been with us 34 years. A lady in the gift shop, 22 years.
Wow. And so, truly family, then.
It really is family. And, you know, my wife, Juanita, works with us. Our son, Brooks, and daughter, Elizabeth, work in the family business. And my sister-in-law, my in-law. I mean, we've got a big family here. But we think that the difference is finding a unique point of difference that makes us separate from everybody. And we think that these authentic old historic buildings are that. And you know, what brings people together? Food brings people together like nothing else. Music does the same, and the arts do that as well. And we think we combine all of those in this old historic setting. We think we got something that's special that people want to hopefully come and see.
Let's loop back to food for a moment, my favorite subject.
All right, mine too.
Yeah. So you have a restaurant.
Yes.
And it's not just a restaurant. It exemplifies the best of Southern cooking. And you take it a step further. I heard you talking earlier about the garden concept. Talk about healthy cuisine melding with Southern cuisine.
Yeah. You know, Southern food gets a pretty bad rap in a lot of circles. And we think it's a little unfair because we think everything in moderation is kind of the key. But, you know, vegetables are the foundation of the Southern table, as my wife Juanita likes to say. And so we have lots of vegetables on our buffet. And then we do the classic Southern meats like fried chicken, catfish, you know, things like country ham, things like that. But we also, you know, recognize that, hey, there's people who are eating healthier. They want to eat healthier. Mm-hmm. So we have a huge salad bar and a fruit bar and a soup bar all to go there, too. And so you can come here and you can eat very healthy if you just eat in moderation. You think of things as being fried. Everything's fried. Well, it's not. We have about 6 to 8 items on our entire menu that are actually fried. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we do flavor them with the good old things that Southern foods flavor with, the butter, the sugar, the salt, and the fat back and things like that.
Talk to us a little bit more about your vision and your plan to grow your own vegetables for your restaurant. And a really cool dimension is your passion and desire to do organic.
Yes. You know, about 10, 12 years ago, I was thumbing through our trade magazines that we get every month in the restaurant industry, and I was occasionally run across an article where this chef somewhere in the country was doing a little garden. They were doing a raised bed, they were doing a garden of some kind, and you begin to hear these words farm to table and local, and then you hear sustainable, and then you hear organic. Mm-hmm. this is not just a trend. This is something that's becoming a lifestyle around the whole country. Mm-hmm. We're trying to be about the best of the South, so it's the best in the traditional Southern cooking, but then it's about the best of kind of a little bit of the New South in the way that people are looking at food now and food ways these days. And so through the years, we would go to the local farmers market as they were starting to develop, and of course they're raging around the country now. But we went to our local market. You know, we would find vegetables that we could serve on our buffet. Then I brought a farmer named Ray Totter to talk to us one day. And I walked him over to an area, about a two-acre plot we had here right beside our country store. And I said, Ray, would this make a garden? And he said, Clark, it would make an awesome garden. And so I said, that day I went to my master plan. I pulled them out. I started erasing stuff and adding garden plots. We created what we call the village gardens. And then we started adding little buildings, historical little outbuildings. And then a lady gave us an historic barn, and then we bought a cotton gin. And so we named this the farm at Casey Jones Village. And we did, and we had our first full year last year. It was so cool that we could go out and pick squash or okra or tomatoes and things like that, go and clean them, and then serve them. They were on that day. They were on the buffet that day. They were on the salad bar that day. And we could talk to our guests about this, you know, and they're all organic too as well. So, and that's what so many people are looking for, and they can find that here. And I talked to somebody at our Tennessee Department of Agriculture, and they said, there's not another restaurant in the state doing this on the scale that you're doing it right outside the doors of your restaurant. That's another point of difference that we really like.
There's another dimension to this that you haven't mentioned yet, and that's your passion for educational, as this is a teaching process too, for kids that don't even know where vegetables come from.
Absolutely. You know, it's tragic, but children today they just don't know where food comes from. I mean, there's no gardens in the backyards of most places anymore. And my wife did a health fair a while back, and a lot of young kids came to it from, you know, the urban area of our community, and they walked through, and she had all these vegetables laid out that were very common to you and me, and that everybody should know what they are. But the kids had no clue what a tomato looked like, what an onion was, what a squash was. And we said, holy smoke, this is not good. This is not good at all. And so we see that as an incredible opportunity to educate young people. And so we're an official teaching garden for the American Heart Association because we want that connection with them and healthier eating. And so if we can work with community outreach groups and ministries to bring people here, and we can teach them about gardening, and they can actually work in the garden and teach them about the vegetables, and then here's how to go back to your home and grow a small raised bed in your own backyard. And so that's ultimately the goal. The education part of what we're doing is critical, I think, to our future.
It's obvious that intrinsic within you and your wife's vision and heart, there's a lot of give back.
You know, the Bible talks about to whomever much is given, much is required, and we take that very seriously. We've been blessed in so many ways. We have, as a business, in 52 years, you're going to see the highest mountaintops, and you're going to see the deepest valleys. And we've seen both of those. But the good Lord has sustained us through all that. And we feel like it's so important that we give back to people. We want to give back. We've been so blessed. And so we see this opportunity to do the educational things and learn about history, learn about Casey Jones, learn about railroading, learn about antiques, the way we used to live 100 years ago, and walking inside these old buildings and learning about their histories as well. You know, the 1837 Antebellum home that we have here, it was what's called a witness house to the Civil War. In 1862, there was a Battle of Trenton, Tennessee. And in that battle, the townspeople realized how the battle was about to unfold as the Confederates came in to take the town back from the Federals. And the Federals were held up in the depot. The Confederates come in and set up their cannon on the hill. The people of the town, this was the tallest structure in town at that time, they climb on the top of the roof and watch the Battle of Trenton, Tennessee unfold right in front of their eyes.
Wow.
So this house has witnessed history. And we have preserved it to look like it did at that time. My wife has done an amazing job collecting all these old period antiques that fit the house beautifully.
Really stepping back in time.
I mean, it's just amazing. And, you know, when you come here to the museum, you can actually climb aboard the engine. You can ring the bell. You know,
we've barely touched on Casey Jones.
Okay, yeah.
And this is where he was from. And that's why this memorial museum and celebration of his career and life is here.
Exactly. You know, Casey Jones was born John Luther Jones in Casey, Kentucky in 1863, but he moved to Jackson, Tennessee at about age 18, went to work for the railroads, quickly rose to the ranks, became an engineer at age 26, which was quite rare in those days, because that was kind of the pinnacle. I mean, those were kind of the astronauts of the day. You can imagine an engine that could go as much as 100 miles an hour in the 1880s, 1890s, that was unbelievable at that time.
They even looked like rocket ships.
Yes, they did, you know. And so, but Casey, you know, he lived there. He married here. He had his children here, lived here. He's buried here. But then, of course, the wreck happened in 1900. He died saving the lives of his passengers. He was running behind, and there was a stalled train on the track. Tried his best to slow it down, crashed through the cars, only person killed. And an African-American wrote a ballad about it. Wallace Saunders wrote a ballad about his lost friend, Casey Jones.
Jimmy Bailey, Director of Museums and Education.
Wallace Saunders is the guy that came up with the song. He was an engine wiper, and he was illiterate, so he never wrote it down. Well, these two vaudeville guys came into town, and they heard him singing it. And so they got him drunk and said, Wallace, if you'll sing that whole song for us, we'll give you a bottle of gin. So he sang the whole song. They gave him a bottle of gin. They published the music in 1909, made millions of dollars off of it, and all Wallace got was a bottle of gin. So that's how the song got out. And the reason it became popular, and this is what a lady told me the other day, these cylinders up here, these Edison cylinders, those all have the Ballad of Casey Jones on them. And she said what would happen back then, everybody had an Edison player, but the only thing they recorded was religious songs. And the first song that they recorded that wasn't religious was the Ballad of Casey Jones. So you'd go to the dance hall, and they'd be cranking it up, and they'd play all those religious songs. And then finally, somebody would put the Ballad of Casey Jones on and crank it up, and you'd dance to that one. So that's why it became so popular.
So was it the ballad that made Casey Jones?
Yes. If it hadn't have been for that song, we wouldn't be standing here today. You're exactly right.
The ballad just spread his fame far and wide, and so here we are today with a museum in his honor.
And is this the go-to place in America for Casey Jones' ephemera in history? Is this it?
This is it. I mean, this is it. This is where he was born. We have his original home, as it looked like in the 1890s when he lived there, at the time of his death. Mrs. Jones lived to be 92 years old. When she was 90, when the museum was founded, she helped set the house up to look like it did. At least she remembered it at the time he was there.
Do you remember her?
I never knew her.
Your mom talked with her, right?
My mother did know her, but I didn't. She was quite a character, but she kept the story alive, as did Sim Webb. Sim was the fireman who survived the accident that night, and he was very articulate as he told the story for the next 56 or 7 years, and he kept the legend alive as well.
So Carl Perkins and Casey Jones put you guys on the map of the world.
Absolutely. You know, and then there's Sonny Boy Williamson, the first.
He's from here?
He's from Jackson, Tennessee, the Shannon Street area. Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin fame came to Jackson many years ago, and he ate at a little restaurant we had downtown. And at the end of his meal, and I just went up and I said, you know, what are you doing in Jackson, Tennessee? And he said, I wanted to breathe the air where Sonny Boy Williamson lived. And the story is that he took a harmonica, because that's what Sonny Boy Williamson was famous for, and he found his grave, and he put a harmonica on his grave, you know. But the blues and so much of, you know, what the Delta of Mississippi and all the music of West Tennessee has had a huge impact on the culture.
On the world.
On the whole world, yeah.
It has been just a delight to meet you and spend time with you. For further information, you have a website?
It's really easy to go to and really easy to remember. CaseyJones.com is the way to remember it.
I bet there's somebody mad you got that first.
I couldn't believe we got it first. I couldn't believe it years ago when we were looking up. I was crossing my fingers, Lord, please, that be a, and it was. And so, but we've got the CaseyJones.com website. And then, of course, my name's Clark Shaw, and I'm the CEO here. And we would love to have, we have visitors from locally, across the nation, around the world. And we'd love to have your listeners come and see us sometime.
And you're right off Interstate 40 on the Nashville-Memphis Music Trail.
Music Highway. You know, we're right in nearly midpoint between Memphis and Nashville. And literally, I-40 is considered Music Highway on the Americana Music Triangle, which is something you're going to be hearing more and more about in the future. There's a case to be made that 70% of the world's music that's known today came out of the triangle from Nashville to Memphis to New Orleans and back.
So pretty cool stuff. Clark, thanks again. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tennessee.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.